Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. 76 years ago, plus 2 days, President Abraham Lincoln spoke 272 words in a space of 2 minutes at Gettysburg, PA, on November 19, 1863. He said that all men, which in the malapropos patois of the era purported to be inclusive of all humanity, are created equal. He also said that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. As Donald Trump has informed all Americans who were unaware, as he had apparently been, Lincoln was a Republican, the first GOP pres. I wonder if Trump is aware that Lincoln was also the first president who was assassinated. Julia Ward Howe, who was unable to vote in American elections because she was a woman, wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic on this same date, 2 years earlier, on November 19, 1861, the year the Civil War began. She also wrote in a poem, "The crimson flower of battle blooms, and solemn marches fill the night." I begin today's program with an article by Bill C. Davis, "Why Impeachment is Essential." This is an abridgment of an article written in 2006 and printed in the North Coast Times-Eagle. Say it, and you are told it won't happen. There's a conscious rage and an unconscious self-defeating deference to the absoluteness of the power that caused the rage. Whether we know it or not, we are defeated by that realization. Impeachment, impossible. Stop thinking about it. Translated, we don't matter. They know it, and we know it. The leaders that perhaps, and in a few minds most likely, rigged national elections, or more specifically, redistributed the treasury to internal, private, corporate allies, sanctioned torture and domestic spying, those people can never be impeached or even investigated. If we felt we owned the House, we would say, get out. But we don't feel we own the House. We are reduced to squatters who will grumble and pay fees for the plot of land allowed us, but we know the land is not ours. We know the government and its treasury isn't ours. So when someone says impeach, i.e. evict, the response, even from the people who said it, not going to happen. But impeachment is essential. It is the remedy for, if one believes in it, the national soul. I think there is such a thing, and it has material and physical manifestations. When it is sick, it demonstrates symptoms. When it is healthy, it yields harvests. A legal and constitutional purge will return the sense of citizen ownership and spiritual health that was robbed along with the election. With that first theft, all other thefts followed. No, the clock can't be turned back. Dead soldiers can't be brought back to life. Flesh and blood limbs won't grow back. The money to war profiteers most likely will not be returned to the treasury. But the national soul, spirit, libido, whatever name we give the invisible American essence, that can be resuscitated and revived. And for that to happen, impeachment is essential. We are being surrounded by a world that doesn't trust us anymore. They aren't all hostile to us. They have lost faith in the power of the American people. And right to the point, as evidenced by comments such as, he should be impeached, but it's not going to happen, we have lost faith in our own power. It's not personal. It's not about how embarrassed we are or don't like the president. It has nothing to do with individual animosity and everything to do with collective power. When exit polls don't match the official tally, it doesn't automatically mean that the time-honored system of exit polls is suddenly unreliable, or that, as we were told, spouses were afraid to admit in front of each other who they voted for. It means something darker and more challenging. The American people did not take the challenge. We did what the coup, and that's in quotes, expected we would do, and we have been doing it ever since, until now. We are at the until now moment. Democratic Party leaders are uncomfortable talking about it. They think strategy. Impeachment is not a strategy. It is a citizen action, a national correction, an honest recall. It may happen city by city, state by state, but the body politic has the right, need, obligation to impeach. Extremist forces may not change their agenda toward us, but the angry, disappointed, moderate elements may reconsider, proving to that section of the world's population that America is of, by, and for the people, will encourage them to act as blockades against violent reactionary elements. Impeachment could well be the ultimate bunker buster that will purge the leadership that the world wants to get at through us. Impeachment could move us from being collateral targets to active citizens. The well-protected architects of this government's suicidal policies are indifferent to what makes us safe. Anyone who talks so much about keeping us safe reveals something quite opposite. What are they trying to convince us of, and why do we believe them? At inauguration, there were mink coats, Stetsons, and lots of parties, and in the streets, a feeling of freefall. It was just going to happen, all of it, whatever lurked after we knew the majority didn't ask for it. The freefall is still going on, but instead of waiting for the hard landing, we can take the land, and instead of falling on our backs, we can stand. But to do that, impeachment is essential. And that was Impeachment is Essential by Bill C. Davis, who is an American playwright and actor of Italian, Irish, and Russian Jewish heritage, best known for his 1980 play, Mass Appeal. He was born in Ellenville, New York, and grew up in the Hudson River Valley. And now, a poem from Carolyn Dunn, World's End. The White River Sioux have an end-of-the-world tale, where a large dog rips out the porcupine quill embroidery an ancient woman is working on every time she laboriously rises to stir the berry soup simmering in the clay cooking pot over the fire. We see ourselves, and then the world's children, grow out of childhood, take on quests and labors, and come to the time of sore joints and watery eyes. The watchful dog, who waits for us to get up and stir the pot, has worn down its old teeth, has worn thin its rapt attention, and fallen asleep. And with this lapse, dog-tired as well, we return to thread the last needle in the long work of our embroidery. Each by each, dog by drowsing dog, we bite the last thread on the buffalo robe's decoration and arrive at this world's end. And that was by Carolyn Dunn. She was once librarian of Harvard on the Hill, Clatsop Community College, and she died of ALS a few years ago, almost a decade now, maybe even a decade, and I certainly do miss her. And now, an editorial from the Los Angeles Times. Ukraine's scandal is a microcosm of what we already know. Trump's presidency is a failure. And it's written by the Times editorial board, dated November 17th, 2019. It's easy to get drawn into the drama of the Ukraine story, to be mesmerized by that country's war against Russia and its brazen corruption, by characters like Hunter Biden and Paul Manafort and Lev and Igor and the ever-shifting cast of presidents, prosecutors, diplomats, and criminals. We're all learning more than we ever thought we would know about Kiev and its internal politics, as the House of Representatives focuses its impeachment inquiry on a narrow set of allegations about President Trump's misbehavior there. But even as members of Congress zoom in tightly on Ukraine, it's important that the rest of us not lose sight of the bigger picture. The Ukraine scandal is, at the end of the day, really just a microcosm, a single piece of a much broader story about this president. What he is accused of doing there is, to one degree or another, what he does everywhere, and it speaks to who he is, his character, his style, his values, and his failure as president. So let's not ignore the wider context in which these allegations have emerged. Trump, as this editorial page has noted repeatedly, is a man for whom everything is transactional and who is engaged in a constant struggle for short-term advantage. Blustering, bullying, threatening, and arm-twisting are his tools. He doesn't feel bound by the rules and niceties that have guided most of his predecessors, or by the constitutional and institutional limits that have constrained them. Norms, shared values, civil institutions, and even the rule of law take a back seat in his playbook to the ceaseless struggle for the upper hand. He doesn't seem to make much distinction between what is good for America and what's good for him, personally. His disdain for the truth and his attraction to conspiracy theories are well known. So really, was anyone surprised at the allegation that Trump sought to extort from the Ukrainian president a favor that would help him in his reelection campaign? Was anyone shocked to be told that Trump would withhold hundreds of millions of dollars in foreign aid that Ukraine desperately needed to defend itself against Russia as leverage to ensure an investigation into Joe and Hunter Biden? Of course you weren't. The fact is that Trump has shown us who he is over and over and over. Look at the findings of the Mueller report. How many times did Trump try to obstruct that investigation, either by firing FBI Director James Comey, or seeking to have Special Counsel Robert S. Mueller III ousted, or trying to prevent the public disclosure of evidence, or browbeating Attorney General Jeff Sessions into protecting him? These are not the actions of a man who plays by the established rules. Remember his decision, rescinded in the wake of public outcry, to select his own Trump Doral golf resort as the site of the G7 summit? That's not the behavior of a man who puts the national interest above his own. Read the Washington Post's list of Trump's falsehoods. Last month, it had grown to 13,435 false or misleading claims over 993 days in office. This is not a person who is putting the voters first. Count the times he has gone after, come after, California, subjecting our state to retaliation for our efforts to protect the environment and promote public safety in immigrant-heavy communities. This is a man who does not forgive his perceived enemies. Consider that prosecutors in New York are scrutinizing the payments made by Trump's personal lawyer just before the 26th election to buy the silence of porn actress Stormy Daniels, who says she had a tryst with Trump. Trump denies Daniels' claim, but really, can we not all agree that this is not your ordinary president? It makes sense for the House to focus narrowly in its impeachment inquiry on the specific allegations involving Ukraine to see if they can be proved, to debate their seriousness, and to determine the appropriate sanction, if any. But let's not kid ourselves. Trump's alleged behavior there, including the secret Rudolph Giuliani back channel, the punishment of aides seen as not sufficiently loyal, the contempt for traditional diplomacy, the embrace of conspiracy theories, the attempted extortion itself, was entirely consistent with the man we know him to be. For those of us who are watching the impeachment proceedings from home and who are still likely to be called upon to vote for or against Trump in November 2020, it would be myopic to consider the Ukraine allegations in a vacuum, as if this man was an isolated example of his unfitness for office. Better to view these egregious charges in the context of all the egregious behavior that has come before, and to bear it all in mind as the saga unfolds. And that was an editorial by the Los Angeles Times. Ukraine scandal is a microcosm of what we already know. Trump's presidency is a failure. And now, from Robert Brake, Ocean Park, Washington, bigot. President Donald Trump's labeling of the impeachment inquiry as a lynching on October 23rd, 2019, was a grotesquely racist remark. Trump previously chastised black athletes for kneeling during the national anthem, asserted that the race problem was Obama's doing, and claimed that both sides shared blame for the violence in Charlottesville on August 12, 2017. His August 2019 denouncement, quote-unquote, of white supremacy sounded like a little boy forced to eat his spinach or rat on his friends. Will his racism, hatred, and its attendant violence ever end? What will it take for Americans to come together to decry bigotry? And can we ever embrace tolerance, empathy, compassion, and goodwill? Donald Trump, our bigot-in-chief and morally sensitive, emotional simpleton, who doesn't have the capacity to tell right from wrong, will no doubt continue to deepen the racial divide. Pandering to public fears around race, Trump will continue to speak to the worst impulses of his MAGA hat-wearing audiences and embrace whatever nasty, violent visions that seem politically expedient at any given moment. In his 1972 autobiography, I Never Had It Made, baseball legend Jackie Robinson reflected on the white man's burden with racism, claiming he couldn't sing the anthem or salute the flag as a black man in a white world. His denouncement of racism created powerful ripples decades later. When Martin Luther King was assassinated on April 4, 1968, Bobby Kennedy addressed a black audience in Indianapolis, noting that, "What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, and a feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black." And that was Robert Kennedy. More about him later. Reflecting on our history of race relations and class warfare, I'm not sure we will ever heal our wounds. Nonetheless, it's far beyond time for us men and women of good conscience to denounce this president, to remember the eloquent urgings of Jackie Robinson and Bobby Kennedy, and to continue our battle against bigotry. We have an urgent obligation to begin the cleanup. And that was by Robert Brake. Bigot. And now, on this date, 45 years ago, November 21st, 1974, Congress overturned President Gerald Ford's veto and passed what then was the latest set of amendments to the United States Freedom of Information Act. In this instance, a set of privacy amendments, such as the right of U.S. citizens to see records the government has compiled on us, the right to amend inaccurate records, and the right to sue the government for secretly or clandestinely sharing personal information compiled on we, the people. The Privacy Act of FOIA also strengthens the rights of citizens to find out what the government knows about each of us. The Freedom of Information Act, first made into law by the 89th Congress on July 5, 1967, is, to quote Wikipedia, a federal freedom of information law that requires the full or partial disclosure of previously unreleased information and documents controlled by the United States government upon request. And a federal court succinctly articulated that the central purpose of the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, is to, quote, open up the workings of government to public scrutiny, unquote, under the premise that an informed electorate is vital to the proper operation of a democracy, quote, unquote. A more specific goal implicit in the FOIA principles, according to the aforementioned court, is to give citizens access to the information on the basis of which government agencies make their decisions, thereby equipping the populace to evaluate and criticize those decisions, quote, unquote. A compelling, high-priority example of releasing imperative information to the public was provided by the administration of Bill Clinton, ironically, one of only two presidents who have so far been impeached, one each for the 19th and 20th centuries, both acquitted. The Clinton administration made a useful and worthy fetish of releasing documents that confirmed long-held suspicions of deliberate nuclear radiation exposure of American citizens by their government over a 50-year period from the end of World War II, involving both Republican and Democratic administrations. The basic rationale of those dangerous experiments was to research on live human beings the effects of radiation on the human body, which would, in theory, help scientists and military planners formulate possible scenarios for nuclear warfare and defense, as well as design ever more lethal nuclear weapons. The most frequent exposures were during the early years of the Cold War, and the most numerously affected were several hundred thousand soldiers deployed near the ground zeros of nuclear bomb tests to determine combat capacities in nuclear warfare. But the most despicable and sinister research was upon private citizens who submitted to medical tests with little or no knowledge of the risks involved. The newly formed Atomic Energy Commission, now the Energy Department, licensed the use of radioactive isotopes in human research in the 1940s with no oversight of medical personnel and authorized the deliberate release of radioactive elements into the atmosphere and environment. Some experiments were conducted at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington State, as well as radioactive material released into the air above surrounding local communities. Workers at nuclear plants and medical subjects at hospitals and universities were among those tested. They numbered at least 9,000, and most likely many thousands more, which included children, newborn infants, and, quote-unquote, foreigners. A 1949 document said the radiation tests were, quote, an opportunity to secure the type of medical information required to interpret in terms of human experience the toxicological findings of small animal research. And continuing in the realm of presidencies, tomorrow, November 22nd, will be 56 years since John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated, the fourth and so far last president murdered while in office. His younger brother, Robert Francis Kennedy, whose 94th birthday would have been yesterday, November 20th, is so far the only presidential candidate successfully assassinated. 51 years ago, on June 5th, 1968, although candidates have always been potential targets for would-be assassins, which includes both Roosevelt's and apparently even Donald Trump. One bright note in this pottage of POTUS purging, 230 years ago yesterday, New Jersey was the first United State on November 20th, 1789, to ratify the Bill of Rights to the Constitution. This is Michael McCusker. Thanksgiving is coming up amidst the impeachment hearings. I envision Donald Trump and his corrupt disciples sitting at a rendition of Da Vinci's The Last Supper. And the question, who will be Judas, or perhaps the pearl, Judai? Heisenberg's uncertainty principle applies to this Trumpian dystopia and its quantum squirm of truth and reality.